Hello. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the AARP Bulletin, the March issue. And I'm going to start with an article by Susie Orman. Now, last week, we talked about the first five of her suggestions for 2020 Smart Money Action Plan. And now we're going to go on and read the last five. Attack your mortgage. If you are determined to stay put in your current home, I first want you to take a clear-eyed look at whether the ongoing property tax and maintenance costs will be something you can comfortably afford on your retirement income. If it is already a stretch today, that should be a big red flashing light. Inflation doesn't stop once you're retired. If the rising cost of staying in your home could become a huge pressure point, I hope you will reconsider my earlier downsizing advice. If you are confident you can afford to stay put, I'm a big believer that you should have the mortgage paid off before you retire. Why? Because it is your biggest expense. And because I have yet to have anyone mad at me because I pushed them to retire free of debt. It will make you happier. Contact your loan servicer and ask for a revised payment schedule to get the mortgage paid off no later than age 65. If you have more than 8 months of living costs set aside for emergencies, you might use some of the extra to pay down your mortgage. I will also prefer that you save as much as possible for retirement. But if you are contributing more than the company match to a workplace retirement plan, consider scaling back your contribution to the point of the match, then using the extra money in your paycheck towards your mortgage payment. Surprised I'm suggesting you cut back on savings? Think about this. Yes, you will be saving less, but you will also be reducing the income you will need in retirement. Use Roth accounts. If you have done most of your retirement savings in a traditional 401k or a traditional IRA, every dollar you withdraw in retirement will be taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. I think you will be so happy in retirement if you have a pot of savings that you can use without owing any taxes. You can create that by putting your new retirement contributions into Roth accounts. With a Roth 401k or a Roth IRA, you do not get an upfront tax break, but in retirement, your withdrawals are 100% tax-free if you follow a few simple rules. Most 401k plans now offer a Roth option. If your plan does, every employee is eligible regardless of income. If your workplace plan doesn't have a Roth option, or if you don't have a workplace retirement plan, in 2020, you can save up to $7,000, $6,000 if you're under 50, in a Roth IRA as long as your modified adjustment gross income is below $124,000 or below $196,000 if you are married and file a joint tax return. That's about $580 a month. You know where I'm headed, right? Please take to heart my advice on living below your means and right-sizing your financial support of adult children. That's money you can save for retirement. Investigate long-term care insurance. Look, I know LTC insurance has a bit of a black eye. Insurers have sprung big premium increases on people who bought policies years ago. But I don't expect that anyone who buys a policy today will face the same steep premium increases. The problem was that prices started out too low. Claims have been way more than what insurances expected. Policies sold today come with more realistic, read more expensive, prices, reducing the likelihood that you will be hit with a large premium increase. These days, a generous policy for a couple might cost $5,000 a year. I get it. That's a lot. Over 30 years, that would be $150,000 in premiums. Just to be super cautious, let's assume there's a premium hike along the way and your all-in cost hits $200,000 over 30 years. Do you realize that even at today's cost for at-home care, assisted living, or nursing home care, you could recoup the loss in just a few years? And you'd better believe that costs for that care will be much higher in 20 or 30 years. Have I opened your mind a bit on LTC? Then consider purchasing a plan now. The longer you wait to buy, the higher the premiums. And as each year passes, you may develop a pre-existing condition that makes it harder or impossible to qualify for a policy. Hands-off Social Security. Okay, my friends, this is a big opportunity to get you to your ultimate retirement or to blow it. While you are allowed to start receiving your Social Security retirement benefits at age 62, if you wait until 70, you will get a payout that is about 76% higher, guaranteed. You can't get that guaranteed return over 8 years from any investment. Yet I am constantly amazed at how so many of you insist on starting at age 62. I recently counseled a woman who didn't need the income, but started at age 62 just because. Luckily, she had been receiving benefits for less than a year, so she was able to repay what she had collected and will now wait to get that much higher age 70 benefit. I want you to do the same if you are in good health. If you are married, I want the higher earner to wait until age 70. That's how to ensure that the surviving spouse will receive the largest possible benefit. When a spouse dies, the surviving spouse can collect only one check, not both. Don't start with me that you don't want to leave money on the table. There's a good chance you'll be alive in your 90s. Even if you begin receiving Social Security at age 70, when you hit your early 80s, your total in payments will be more than if you started getting a lower benefit at age 62. And finally, buy some guaranteed income. There is no better sleep at night, enjoy your retirement move, than to know you can cover your basic monthly living expenses from income that is guaranteed to land in your bank account every month. Your Social Security benefit is guaranteed income. So is a pension, if you have one. If those guaranteed sources don't cover all your living expenses, I think it can make great sense to use some of your retirement savings to purchase an income annuity. If you just cringed at the mere mention of an annuity, I am actually thrilled. There are indeed plenty of lousy annuities that make insurance agents a lot of money and are a bad deal for you. I am recommending only one specific type of annuity, a plain vanilla annuity where, in exchange for paying a premium to an insurer, you can lock in guaranteed monthly income for the rest of your life. You can buy an immediate income annuity with a single lump sum payment you make right when you are ready to start living off your retirement income. The payout you receive is based on your age, whether benefits will continue for a spouse, and interest rates. To get an estimate of what size premium you would need to generate the guaranteed income you want, go to immediateannuities.com or incomesolutions.com. While covering your ongoing costs with guaranteed income is a great stress reducer, so is having cash ready to handle whatever comes your way, such as a spike in out-of-pocket medical bills. As you reach retirement, I recommend increasing your emergency fund from 8 months to 2 years of coverage. If you don't have all your living expenses covered by guaranteed income, I would bump this up to a three-year cushion. What you do with the rest of your savings is a personal choice. The prospect of living into your 90s should be motivation to keep some of your money working, invested, for a future older you. But I also want you to give yourself the freedom to expend extra savings on you, your loved ones, or causes you care about. Here's a sidebar of help for you from AARP. You can take advantage of these resources to secure your finances. Ace Your Retirement. In just 3 minutes, this online tool will give you a personalized action plan for what you can do today to help boost your retirement savings. It's ACE, A-C-E, yourretirement.org. Work and save. Learn how AARP is fighting for new retirement savings options to ensure that every worker has a chance to save for a more secure future. For that, you go to aarp.org/myfuture. Social Security Resource Center. Find answers to people's most common questions about this program and its benefits. That's found at aarp.org/Social Security. My Savings Jar. This AARP Foundation program provides community support and expert coaching to help you build up your savings, even if you're on a tight budget. And that's found at mysavingsjar.org. And finally, AARP Money Map. Get a free step-by-step action plan to manage unexpected bills. That's at aarp.org/moneymap. Now we're going to see about why eating organic matters. Organic and locally grown foods are all the rage. Two food experts weigh in on whether the health benefits are worth the cost. Does any old apple a day to keep the doctor away, or does it have to be organic? The answer is, honestly, that's impossible to say right now. Why is that? First of all, almost nobody eats purely organic versus purely non-organic, so it's impossible to divide people into two groups for comparison. There's an overlap, and when two groups that are supposed to be different are a bit alike, their outcomes look more like one another. So there's no evidence that organic foods are better for you? We didn't say that. There is a burgeoning array of large observational studies that look at people who reportedly willfully eating organic routinely versus people who didn't. As of this writing, the most recent study is out of France, where researchers found a significant difference in cancer incidence between those who eat organic routinely versus those who don't. Those people who ate organic most often had the least cancer, as you would expect. Well, does that mean that organic is better after all if it keeps you from getting cancer? The study really isn't conclusive, though. Ah, why not? Maybe what makes the two groups different is the total level of care they take with their health. It could be that all those people eating organic have access to better medical care, more cash to spend, higher quality of life, that kind of thing. Generally, organic foods cost more, which means more well-to-do people, those with better health care and usually better living conditions, are more likely to be the ones eating better. So we still don't know for sure, but at least for the first time, we have a strong association between routine consumption of organic food and an important health outcome. If I'm looking at organic and non-organic apples side by side as a store, and I can't afford the organic ones, what should I do? A non-organic apple is better than no apple, and better than most other choices, Rinsing conventionally grown produce reduces the pesticide residue and so arguably narrows the difference between organic and non-organic. So yes, get the non-organic apples and wash them well. It's almost safe to say, never pass up an apple. What about trying to eat locally? Lovercare is a relatively new term, but ancient way of eating. Lovercovores eat, or try to eat, food produced locally, although, of course, the word local is pretty vague. Before food was shipped, everyone was a locavore. Now the term has come to have a deeper meaning, that what you eat matters to your health, and the quality and composition of what you eat are in turn determined by how the food is raised, what it's fed, and where it's from. Why is it worth expending extra time and usually money to eat locally? Reducing carbon footprint, supporting local economies, eating seasonally and fresh, knowing where your food comes from and how it was raised. All of these are inarguably positive attributes, and all are characteristics of local food. No one but a fanatic could eat only local food. But concentrating on these attributes would mean you're eating better, more ethically, more sustainably. If you know your produce is being grown on a local farm where chemicals are not being used, you know that you are avoiding those chemicals. If you know the soil is being nurtured appropriately, you know it's rich in nutrients. If your food has not been in storage in transit for days or weeks, it will have much more of its native nutrient content when you eat it. So, local sourcing means that foods have better nutrient composition? In general, yes. Though, if you're sourcing industrially produced corn locally, then probably not. It makes sense that our agriculture and health are connected. There's no way around it. So the more you know about how and where plants are grown, the more confident you can be about their nutrient quality. Does soil composition affect animal products too? Oh yeah. This issue is even more important when you consider animal foods. The nutrient composition of meat is substantially connected with the diet and exercise pattern of the animal. Meat is leaner and has less saturated fat when animals get more exercise, for instance. The composition of meat also varies with what animals eat and the nutrients in those plants, which are in turn influenced by the soil. Healthy, nutritious soil means healthy, nutritious meat. When animals graze on grass, as opposed to grains, they keep the soil healthy and produce better meat. And pasture-raised animals have lower risks of industrial foodborne scourges, like E. coli, a strain that can cause severe infection and even kidney failure. It came from the intestines of cattle, particularly those that were fed grain rather than grass. So if animal rights and environmentalist arguments don't motivate you to eat local, remember that it also matters to your personal health. Having said that, it is, of course, possible to produce bad or nutritionally deficient food locally. But a main advantage of sourcing locally is that you can see or learn about the production of your food and easily make that judgment. It also pretty safe to say that a locavore diet does not include nationally distributed food products made in a factory somewhere, which pretty much means it includes junk food. Does that mean locavores can eat whatever they want? Grass-fed burgers and locally produced cheese all day? Not exactly. It's still important to have a plant-predominant diet along with balance and variety. And now we have a little sidebar that says, don't panic, eat organic. Since 2004, the Environmental Working Group has been publishing the Dirty Dozen, its annual list of fruits and vegetables most likely to contain pesticide residue, even after being washed. If you're choosing to buy some organic produce, These are the ones to prioritize. Strawberries, spinach, kale, nectarines, apples, grapes, peaches, cherries, pears, tomatoes, celery, and potatoes. And now we have a place for grandparents to be parents. In housing complexes around the country, grand families come together to get help and to help each other. They lived more than a year without a permanent home, but Peter Cordero and his 12-year-old granddaughter, Jada, found a place to lay their heads at Grandparent Family Apartments. This 50-unit complex in the South Bronx, New York, was designed specifically for grandparents raising grandchildren. Jada gets tutoring help and no longer has to worry about where to do her homework in the cramped quarters of a homeless shelter. When she first came to see the apartment and they gave us the keys, she was the happiest girl in the world, says Cordero, 64, who has raised Jada since birth, because her mother was unable to care for her. But Cordero has chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, and emphysema, and supports the two of them on disability income. If it was just me, I'm okay. I can survive, he says. But she's growing. She grows out of her clothes. At Grandparents' Family Apartments, he pays $303 in monthly rent, an amount based on his income. This grand family complex opened in 2005, part of a trend which such specialized housing has been developed in 17 U.S. cities, according to nonprofit group Generations United. About 2.6 million children are being raised without a parent in the home by grandparents, other relatives, or close family friends, Generations United says. That dynamic is driven, at least in part, by social problems like the opioid epidemic, incarceration, and most recently, immigration policies that have left American-born children separated from their parents. This has put particular stress on grandparents, many of whom lack the money or coping skills to take on all the challenges of a parental role. The complexes that are successful have the social workers, the tutors, the support groups, the special services, said Donna Butts, Generations United Executive Director. Where it has not been successful is where it is just an apartment. Residents also help each other. You're putting people together who have similar experiences and needs and providing them with a sense of community, says Megan Dobleman McNabb, an associate professor in Virginia Tech's Department of Human Development and Family Service. It can be difficult for grandchildren. They're trying to make sense of, why can't my mom take care of me? Living near other children raised by grandparents has the potential to help grandchildren cope with these types of issues. Financing for such complexes and services is from a mix of private and public funds. The $12.8 million Grandparent Family Apartments was built with low-income housing tax credits and private financing and fundraising. The complex is a joint effort among Presbyterian Senior Services, the Westside Federation for Senior and Supportive Housing, and the New York City Housing Authority. The Housing Authority contributes to a subsidy to keep the rent affordable. Gail Fedeli, 69, arriving at the complex in 2013 when her grandchildren, Cassandra and Vicente, were teenagers. Before that, they spent 3 years in a New York City homeless shelter. They now live in a three-bedroom apartment. Fedeli volunteers in the office. Vincenzi is a 22-year-old student at City College in Manhattan, and Cassandra, 24, who has mental health needs, may soon move into supportive housing. Fedeli has diabetes, COPD, and congestive heart failure. She recently submitted a request to be transferred to public housing in Manhattan as her grandchildren age out of grand family housing. In time, Vicente may reverse roles and start caring for his grandmother. He will take care of me until the day he gets married, Federley says, and then he can leave. Now, here's a list of grand family housing complexes that have been developed. Phoenix, Arizona, South Tucson, Arizona, Hartford, Connecticut, Washington, D.C., Chicago, Illinois, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Baltimore, Maryland, Boston, Massachusetts, Kansas City, Missouri, Paterson, New Jersey, South Bronx, New York, Cleveland, Ohio, Beaverton, Oregon, Grand Ronde, Oregon, North Portland, Oregon, Smithville, Tennessee, and Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now we have time for a few more words of wisdom from dancer choreography Twyla Tharp. What advice on aging would you give to someone who's not as disciplined as you are? 1. Expect it to be a positive experience and do whatever you can to support that expectation. Aging isn't easy, and anyone who says it isn't experiencing it. Obviously, there are challenges. The body is insulting the mind, which remembers things that were once possible. When you look back at your life, what has been the organizing thread? Commitment. I decided that the physical body was a very wise instrument, and I would investigate its possibilities. You don't want to have a goal that you can accomplish. You want one that will continually pull you along to the next discovery. What's your dream for the future? Unity. I hope for unity for myself and my endeavors. I hope for unity for this country, for unity globally. Unity. So let's spend the time we have left with Last Laugh. A real superfood? What's a tried and true remedy for all that ails you? Your mother probably made you a good bowl of soup, and now some schoolchildren in London may have proved it. As part of a class project, the kids lab-tested more than 50 different types of soup to see how well each would fight disease. Cabbage soup worked the best, blocking transmission of a parasite by up to 50%. The study was impressive enough to be published recently in the Archives of Disease in Childhood. Perhaps the heading should have been, "Mom was right." Now, you gotta laugh. Pam, now that you've gone bald, why do you still carry a comb? Sam, I can't part with it. Don, do you ever tell Dad jokes? John, I do, and sometimes he even laughs. Farah, did you buy that book about avoiding scams? Sarah, yes. I paid $500, so it must be good. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.